The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Gloria, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway on this Thursday, September 30th in the year of our Lord 2021. I'm here to tell you that high schools all across the land have bad musicals every year. Now, they're not awful. Some are actually pretty good, but most of them are pretty bad. Some of them are terrible. There's a bell curve of high school musicals. But they usually feature one or two people who are overacting extremely well. One or two people whose voices don't quite reach the level you need for Broadway or even dinner theater at the local summer playhouse. They're just high school musicals, and they're fun, and they're good, and they're done by high school kids. And they'll never go down as great drama or great theater. We have our version of that inside the Beltway this week. Now, whether you're listening to me in Washington State or the tip of Florida, whether you're in San Diego and waking up early in America's finest city or up in Maine, driving around the wonderful streets of Portland or Nashua or Manchester, today is Theater Day in D.C. We have a lot of theater going on. In the Financial Times, we have the headline, Joe Biden locked in precarious talks to save landmark legislation. In the New York Times, Democrats move to avert shutdown, but divisions imperil Biden's agenda. Then in the Washington Post, Biden, Pelosi embark on late scramble to save trillion-dollar infrastructure bill. A second headline in the Washington Post, Biden sticks to his deal-making strategy, as some Democrats want him to do more to bring holdouts on board. Then finally from the Wall Street Journal, infrastructure bill's fate uncertain, headed into planned House vote. Okay, here's what's going to happen. The squad is going to roll over. AOC and her three buddies are going to cry on the floor. They're going to get private assurances that next week the $3.5 trillion will pass. It's all pantomime. It's a giant game of charades. The Democrats never fall apart. They're going to win. Inflation is going to win. You are going to lose. Next week, they will roll over Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin and Maggie Hassan in New Hampshire and Mark Kelly in Arizona and Cortez Masto in Nevada and Raphael Warnock in Georgia. All of them will roll over as well. And another $3.5 trillion. By the end of the week, $7 trillion will have been, this time next week, $7 trillion spent. On top of the $2 trillion earlier this year, $9 trillion. And on top of all of that, last year's COVID relief passed by a bipartisan measure. There's going to be so much inflation. Well, let me do the financial report early. Let me brought to you by Birch Gold. Every single day I tell you what's happening in the markets. Yesterday, the Dow went up 90 points. The NASDAQ went down 30 as they churn around on the thinnest of hopes that the Democrats will not drive the fiscal sanity of the United States over a cliff. The pretty thin hope. The 10-year Treasury jumped up to 1.54% because they know as soon as one or both of these bills pass, inflationary pressures will go through the ceiling and everything you've been paying for is going to go up 5, 10%. Gas is going to skyrocket. Gold is at 1730. Began its march north yesterday, I believe. At 1,730, if you want to buy some gold, just the bullion, or you want to buy American Eagles or Maple Leafs, send my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747, or visit Hugh Gold. That's the way to do it. That's the best way to lay in against the winter that is coming to the value of your savings. If you've got money sitting in a money market account, not going to work. You're going to have to find some investments. I use mutual funds, growth funds. I use Amazon, real estate. Diversify. and gold. Why? Because the dollar, if they print as many as they plan to print this week and next, it ain't going to be worth what it used to be. Now, that's the big story of the day. That's the market update. Mark Davis is sitting in for me tomorrow. He'll bring you the big dramatic conclusion that they spent $5 trillion, or at least they spent the first trillion and a half of it, the infrastructure bill. Nancy Pelosi promised to vote today. She doesn't have the votes unless the squad goes along. The squad will roll over and they'll cry softly in the corner and pretend like they always do. They're never going to win the spelling bee, that gang. You know, I should send them the new Vince Flynn novel, Enemy at the Gates. You've heard Kyle Mills on this show. It's the number one bestseller, Mitch Rapp novel. It would cheer them up. It would have a good guy winning. They think they're the good gals and they think they're losing. And they're not losing. They're helping Nancy Pelosi cement her, quote, legacy, which will be forgotten as soon as the doors on the chamber close. The vanity of Washington, D.C. is really immense. You know who John Chancellor is? Of course you don't. John Chancellor was the biggest guy in news 40 years ago. The clock marches on. Everybody forgets everything. Even the people who get buildings named for him. Rayburn. You know who Rayburn is? Of course you don't know who Rayburn is. He was the Nancy Pelosi of his day. You might get a building, but nobody knows who you are. It's all vanity. I wish they would just leave us alone. Now, the important stuff that happened over the last 2 days happened in the Senate and the House. And I have been waiting to play for you the key takeaways. And I want to start with Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin talking about what were we supposed to be doing in Afghanistan? Preventing a terror attack in the United States. What have we done? Cut number one.
Now, terrorist organizations seek ungoverned spaces so that they can train and equip and thrive. And so there is clearly a possibility that that can happen here going forward. Our goal is to maintain a laser-like focus on this so that it doesn't happen.
All right, laser-like focus doesn't happen over the horizon. Sure. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Mark Milley, responding to Elise Stefanik from New York, said, here's what you have to know about terrorism, cut number two.
I think right this minute it is lesser than it was in 9/11. However, I think the conditions are set or could be set, and I testified to this yesterday. I say it again. I've said it in public many times. The conditions could be set for a reconstitution of al-Qaeda and or ISIS. And I gave some specific times in my statement, and I stand by those. I think that it's a real possibility in a not-too-distant future, 6, 12, 18, 24, 36 months, that kind of time frame, for reconstitution of al-Qaeda or ISIS, and it's our job now, you know, under different conditions, but it's our job to continue to protect American citizens against attacks from Afghanistan.
You get that? 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, 36 months. Al-Qaeda attacking us from Afghanistan. That would be during the Joe Biden years. General Milley continued talking about how the Taliban takeover has been a boon to morale among the terrorists. Cut number three.
I think the Taliban sitting in Kabul significantly emboldens the radical jihadi movement globally. The analogy I've used with many others is it likely will put a shot of adrenaline into their arm. Their grandfathers defeated the Soviet Union in the war in Afghanistan many, many years ago. And they are taking this on their own networks right now and declaring it a major victory. So I think it's a big morale boost.
Of course it is. They beat the United States. We ran away. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin was in a Q&A with Austin Scott, congressman from Texas, about the status of Afghan pilots who fled that country a month ago. Cut number four.
And there are 145 Afghan Air Force personnel in Tajikistan. They flew 16 aircraft into that country on August the 13th. It's now September the 29th. We need to get them out of Tajikistan. These are people who trained with us. They fought with us. That they did everything that we ask of them. And we have gotten no assistance at all from the State Department to move them. And I'm asking all three of you for your help in addressing the issue. Secretary Austin, we need the help.
Acknowledged, sir, and we will get with state right away to see if we can.
They'll get with. I would say a prayer for those Afghan pilots, because we will get with state right away is what they've been saying to all the American citizens, the LPRs, the green card holders, the SIV eligible. They've been telling that for months, and then nothing happens. This is the 1 month anniversary of our bug out, September 30th. And the Taliban are killing people every day. You want to find out anything that anyone has said about Afghanistan, head over to my search engine widget at hughhewitt.com, type in Afghanistan. You'll find conversations with David Petraeus and Stanley McChrystal. You'll find conversations with George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Afghanistan has always been front and center on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Right now, we're just looking at the remains of the day and the defeat that we've suffered. But I'll come back and fill you in with more of what General Milley and General McKenzie and Secretary Austin had to say yesterday when we returned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. Icarian Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined from Israel by Dr. Michael Oren, former ambassador of Israel to the United States, former deputy minister in the government. Good morning, Michael Oren. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
It's so good to be back, Hugh. How are you?
Good. This week, Naftali Bennett went to the UN and he said, basically, Iran has reached breakout moment. And he said, words will not stop Iran. What's the message there, Dr. Oren? Is he saying the attack on Iran is coming?
Well, he buried that line. I looked; it was at minute 18 of a 25-minute speech. But he said it. He said words alone will not stop centrifuges. I wish he had said it up front. I wish he had said it like 50 times over in a true Churchillian manner. But the answer is yes. The fact of the matter is, Israel cannot coexist with a nuclear-armed Iran, and Israel can't even coexist with a threshold Iran that could decide in a day to make a bomb within 3 days. Now, the United States probably can, and Russia, China can, but we can't because Hezbollah attacks us tomorrow with 100,000 rockets. We've got to go and invade southern Lebanon. We can't be in a situation where we're going to have a nuclear weapon to our head. That's what it's about. It completely erases our maneuverability, and so we can't coexist with it. And if they make that move, and I've gone on record saying they could make that move in the winter when the weather is bad and our Air Force can't be as effective and the world is going to be preoccupied with corona, we're going to have to act.
I think they'll make that move during the Olympics because they're going to count on restraint by the Israeli government during the Olympics. But they will reach breakout. They will reach breakout.
Point, if you don't mind.
Go, please do. That's everyone.
I hadn't thought of that.
It's when Dick... Dictators do stuff during the Olympics. Remember Putin and Ukraine. So tell me, Dr. Oren, how much will it take to reduce their ability to degrade it? You don't have to destroy Iran. You don't have to topple the regime. You just have to degrade their nuclear weapons enrichment capacity. Do you have any idea what it will take?
I have an idea. I'd rather not go into details about it. Israel does not have the capabilities that the United States has. We've talked about it several times on this program. We wish he had. We do not have strategic bombers, but we have other means. And I think that we could set back this program significantly. You know, keep in mind, historically, empirically, there have been two hostile nuclear programs in the Middle East. And we were probably the targets of those nuclear programs, one in Syria, one in Iraq. Israel took them both out militarily, and they've never been rebuilt since. So we're two for two on that. Now, this is a much, much bigger nuclear program. It's spread out. It's in a country that's vastly bigger. But Israel is also stronger today than it was, 30, 40 years ago. So keep that in mind.
Do you believe that the moment you the country would launch any kind of degrading attack on the Iranian nuclear capacity, that Hezbollah would strike. So do you believe in a preemptive attack on Hezbollah would have to occur at the same time as a strike on Iran?
You can't rule it out. You can't rule it out. And you know, there's a conventional wisdom here that says that Lebanon's morass, you know, there's no food, there's no electricity, there's no gas, has a restraining effect on Hezbollah. I think it's just the opposite. I think the fact that we cannot bomb Lebanon back into the Stone Age because we're already in the Stone Age. And if we do bomb his Lebanon, we basically, Hezbollah controls Lebanon, so we'd be declaring war against Lebanon. The world community would come down on us like a ton of bricks that we're already causing, you know, undue agony to a country that's already in undue agony. So I think that Hezbollah may even think that the situation in Lebanon provides a shield for them and make them more sort of battle-ready.
But you know what's interesting, I mean, Dr. Oren, is that in order to attack Iran, you have to attack Hezbollah. In order to attack Hezbollah, you have to mobilize. In order to mobilize, you have to let Iran know that something's coming. How in the world do you solve that triangle?
Well, first of all, I've long been a critical of our attitude toward Hezbollah and even toward Hamas. And we basically play Iran's game. These are Iranian proxies.
Yes.
During the May fighting with Hamas, 95% of the rockets that were fired at us are actually made in Iran, and we fire back at Hamas. Why aren't we firing back at the country that's sending Hamas, the country that's sending Hezbollah? I think for every rocket that passes over our border, we should take out an oil refinery. I really do. And that should be the new calculus.
But isn't my problem your problem, which is they're going to know, you're going to telegraph the punch?
No, not at all. I think that the first punch would go against Iran, and then Hezbollah would have to decide whether they want to react or not.
But you're not mobilized.
Keep in mind, the major threat here is the nuclear threat. You know, Tom Friedman keeps on quoting some Israeli officer over and over again, saying the major threat Israeli thinks is the missile threat. No. He wants to believe that because he wants to downplay the nuclear issue. That's Tom Friedman's agenda. The fact is, the thing that is the existential threat is the nuclear issue, is a nuclear bomb, is a nuclear program. The missile's okay. They've got 150,000 rockets. You know, there's some big rockets. We'll survive it. We've got great civil defense. We've got Iron Dome. We'll take care of it. But the major blow has to be against the nuclear program.
With that note, Michael Oren, thank you. Follow him at Dr. Michael Oren, Dr. Michael Oren over at Twitter, Dr. Michael Oren at Twitter. During the break, why don't you also please go over to HughHewitt.com and make a contribution to Alliance Defending Freedom. Make this $1,000 Thursday. I know some of you have very deep pockets, and you know how important ADF is to the preservation of religious liberty and the First Amendment in the United States, how important it is to your church, to your synagogue. It's a tax-deductible donation. Make it $1,000 Thursday. Go over there. But whether it's $10 or $1,000, please be generous to Alliance Defending Freedom. Let it load at the very top of HughHewitt.com. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Former Senator Jim Talent from the great state of Missouri is with the Bipartisan Policy Center. He joins me this morning. Jim, good morning. The newspapers are full of contrived drama. Will the government shut down? Will the stimulus bill pass? Will the $3.5 trillion social infrastructure bill pass? What will happen to the squad? What about Kristen Sinema? What about Joe Manchin? Here's what my prediction is. Everything passes and they spend all the money after pretend drama. What do you think?
Well, if I had to guess from the outside, and you don't really know, the best intel is the people managing the whip teams, obviously. And it's possible they don't know. But my guess is the Democrats are not going to leave that $1.2 trillion infrastructure money on the table, that they'll pass that at some point. You have always been skeptical that they could get another big reconciliation bill through the Senate. I don't think it's just Manchin. I think there's a half a dozen Democrats who would prefer not to vote on something like particularly the tax increases. But we will see. They're going to have difficulty, I think, getting a debt limit increase eventually to the Senate because Schumer did not put the instructions for one in the last budget resolution. And so far, McConnell's saying, I'm not going to finance, you know, your deficit spending.
They've got to go back.
And
you are. Were you on the budget committee, Jim? Were you on the budget committee?
No, please. I always avoided that.
Well, I think they've got to go back and amend the budget resolution to add reconciliation instructions. It takes 2 weeks. They better get started.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's the point. And McConnell's been saying this for months. He's the best Republican leader since Dole, in my opinion. I mean,
100%.
Yeah. And he's been saying for months, look, we're not going to finance this enormous deficit spending. You're going to have to do it, and yet Schumer did not put the instructions in the last budget resolution. So you're right, it takes a couple of weeks, and I don't know that Schumer's really faced up to that yet. I think I've thought for months, Hugh, that the infrastructure bill would eventually pass. The House would take what the Senate gives them, just as they did in 2009. This is galling to the House, and not just because the progressives don't like it because it's not big enough. It's galling to sit there in the House and have the Senate serve you a bill and say, no, we're not going to conference. This is our bill. You take it or leave it. But they passed Obamacare on that basis, and I think they'll pass the infrastructure bill. That's my guess.
That requires that the squad swallow their pride and get
that
rolled.
They climb down, yes.
Yeah, that they climb down. Yeah. And I am betting that they climb down, and just like they did on Iron Dome. I will have tears and wailing, and in the end, they will actually just be politicians.
And this idea they're going to negotiate with individual senators, I mean, this has been going on for a long time, and they're not going to get individual senators to say, oh, yeah, we're going to give you what. Manchin's not going to do that. So this is my guess. But what I don't know is the behind-the-scenes pressure being put by the different interest groups, because I'm not there anymore. There are some things you really only know by going out and talking to people day after day. You have to see how they're moving and what they're thinking. That's what I used to do when I was on the Whip team. I would talk like every few days to the people that I knew were going to be in the middle, and you get a feel for what they're eventually going to do.
But Senator, I believe that if Kristen Sinema stands strong against the $3.5 trillion and says no, that she's elected for life and will be on a national ticket someday. I believe that will empower her as a genuine moderate Democrat. And if Joe Manchin, if they jam him too hard, he could flip. He's not really a Republican, but he could be the most liberal Republican in the caucus, and they'd probably give him the chairmanship of anything he wanted. Am I right?
Well, they certainly would be willing to make some kind of a deal like that. They protect his seniority. Even he wouldn't have to go in as a freshman, and there's a lot of precedent for that. Yeah, you know what? Doing what you think is right is actually not a bad thing to do politically.
And it's not bad for Sinema to go to the White House and be yammered at by the president forever. She just keeps going. She went three times yesterday. That ever happened to you, Jim Talent?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, you can't really say no to going to see the president, but you just keep telling the president the same thing, what you're going to do and why. I mean, I've been skeptical, you, that they would get another big reconciliation bill through the Senate, and I don't think it's just Manchin and Sinema. I think there are others that do not want to have to vote, particularly on the tax increase provisions. One thing to pass a budget resolution with this big number in it. It's another thing to vote for the underlying bills that raise people's taxes in the way that they've been talking about doing.
From your lips to God ears, Jim Talent. Follow Jim on Twitter at Jim Talent. Thank you, Senator. And follow me, please, to HughHewitt.com, where if you wait for it to load, at the very top there will be the Alliance Defending Freedom banner. Please make this $1,000 Thursday. In fact, make it $10,000 Thursday. Every dollar you give to Alliance Defending Freedom protects religious liberty in the United States and makes it possible for the gospel to spread around the world. It's like your tithe. It is the tent pole of the Constitution is the free exercise clause. It's what holds everything together, makes it possible for praying people to pray. The establishment cause prevents people from making you pray. Together, the Alliance Defending Freedom supports the Constitution. They do so more effectively than any other legal group in America. And they represent all the churches and all the persecuted people for free, thanks to people like you. So that whether it's $10 or $10,000 or anything in between, please, during this break, go to HughHewitt.com and be generous. To Alliance Defending Freedom, the banner will load at the very top. Just be patient. Take a click or two. And then I'll be back in hour three of the Hugh Hewitt Show with Senators Cotton and Lankford. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com.
Glory America, bonjour, hi Canada, greetings to everyone in the United States. One of my favorite guests, Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma, joins me. I love Senator Lankford because of his voice. I love his family. I love the fact that for years he ran Falls Creek Youth Camp in Oklahoma, so he knows basically everyone who's anyone in Oklahoma and went to church camp ever. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Good morning to you as well.
Well, Senator, I am curious. You're on finance. You're one of the guys who control. You're the taxpayer's friend, according to the National Taxpayers Union. You know what's going on. The reconciliation instruction didn't include an instruction to raise the debt limit. So I think they have to amend the budget resolution. I think it's got to go through you. Where are we on all of the $5 trillion in two chunks that the Democrats want to pass this week?
So obviously they're stuck. This is a fight between the left and the far left, and they're not really willing to have any conversations with us at all as they're trying to figure out how far they can go. And you've got some folks on the left saying, are we crazy? This is another $5 trillion that we're trying to be able to put down after we put $2 trillion down earlier this year. And there are some folks saying we need to stop and think about this. It's Joe Manchin. It's multiple others that are on the Democrat side. And then there's the far left saying, oh, no, this is our moment to make history. We want to be FDR-like. We want to be the historic Congress that made the biggest entitlement program ever. And so it's our moment in the sun to go do all of this. So that's the big fight right now. And there's quite a few folks that are in the mix, that are on the left, that are really duking it out. And quite frankly, the taxpayers and our economy are the ones sitting there saying, when are you guys going to just wake up to the fact that we don't need to do this? With the economy as precarious as it is right now, with employment and all the issues that are there, dumping another $3 to $5 trillion more in entitlements will make it worse.
Now, Senator, I really appreciate when you come on because you do have the gift of explaining complex things. I mean, you worked with teenagers for how long did you run Falls Creek for?
15 years.
Okay, so you're used to breaking it down for teenagers. So I want you to break it down for the Steelers fans who are listening and everyone who's listening. We spent a lot of money in 2020 on COVID, and that was bipartisan. It was necessary.
Right.
I think it was $4 trillion. Was it $5 trillion last year?
It was a little over $3.5
trillion. $3.5 trillion. So that was last year. We've spent $2 trillion this year. That's $5 trillion. So the Democrats want to double the amount of money we've already printed. That's $10 trillion in 2 years. Would you explain to the audience why that's a terrible idea?
Oh, it's a terrible idea because it obviously causes inflation. We've already watched what happened when we were coming out of all the pandemic earlier this year, when they dumped $2 trillion on the economy at that moment as the economy was rising. It's caused all this inflation. It's caused all the problems that we have in employment across the country. You can't dump $2 trillion into an economy and tell people to start spending, disincentivize work at the same time, which breaks down the supply chain that's all over the country. You can't do that at the same time and not have inflation like what we have right now. It's just basic economics. So for many of us, we look at this and say, why are you looking at $3.5 trillion at least in new entitlements? To give you just a picture of what they're trying to add on top of the entitlements the federal government already has, if you add up the total budget from every state in America, all 50 states, their total budget is $2 trillion a year. They want to do $3.5 trillion of new entitlements on top of all those things, on top of the entitlements we already have. It will absolutely break down our system. And so that's why many of us are worried about this, because it'll cause prices to continue to rise, and it'll cause employment numbers to continue to be more and more challenging.
So, Senator Lankford, you know, they're working over Senator Sinema tough. She's a colleague of yours. I know you get along with the Democrats very well, and I appreciate that. I approve of that. You and Senator Scott work hard to make sure that people stay civil and in conversation with each other. Poor Kristen Sinema, I thought I'd never say that, but she had to go down to the White House for 3 treatments yesterday. I mean, they worked her over 3 times. I don't even know what's going on to Joe Manchin. Are they buckling?
So far, I've not seen him buckling. In fact, Joe Manchin actually sent the message out yesterday saying, what are we thinking, Democrats? Everybody needs to slow down and be able to take a look at what's really going on with this, that this is fiscal insanity. He's not wrong on that. Now, he's saying, let's keep talking, let's keep working, maybe we can get a slightly smaller package. I have to tell you, by the way, $1 trillion is a big number. If they take it from $3 trillion to $2 trillion, that is still an enormous amount of money. And on all of those things, it's not the cost, as my friend Tim Scott says. It's not the cost. It's the content. The cost is bad, but the content is even worse. The social entitlements, all the things that they're pouring on the economy, the tax treatments, the IRS tracking all of our bank activity, all of those things, that's the worst part of it. So they can do a smaller length of bad, and it's still really bad. And so I would encourage people not to get caught up in the, well, $2 trillion is better than $3.5 trillion. It's not necessarily so. If they take it, let's say they do 5 years worth of $3.5 trillion in spending, and then they take it to 2.5 years and say, well, look, isn't it so much cheaper? The same bad policy is there that they're trying to be able to put in place to be able to have something that's extended out past this time. That's going to be a real problem.
Earlier this week, I want to compliment you on going to the floor to not talk about the headlines, but to actually speak about an important subject, the dignity of work. Why did you do that? What did you see? You can't reproduce the speech. People can go look it up online. James Lankford, Oklahoma, Dignity of Work. Why did you do that?
Because what the Democrats are proposing in this $3.5 trillion package goes directly at the American dream, goes directly at individuals and who we are as Americans. I think their work has incredible dignity in all levels. There was a famous speech from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We talked about the dignity of work of individuals. It was to incentivize people to be able to step away from government benefits, to use government benefits, as Jack Kemp used to talk about, as the trampoline, not the hammock, and to be able to step out of that and to be able to say, what can we do to help people go through the safety net and get out? What Democrats are doing are disincentivizing work that actually destroys families long term. You and I have talked about this before. I come from a biblical worldview. Work is over and over again encouraged in Scripture, but it also gives purpose and meaning to people when they actually work. When people don't work, they can't answer the most basic question of our society: what do you do? And if you can't answer that question, it is demeaning to you, to your children, to your grandchildren. It sets a bad example, and it breaks down our economy. So culturally, it's bad for individuals and for families. Economically, it's bad for individuals. We need to incentivize work. And if you go back to even Bill Clinton and his famous speeches about we're ending welfare as we know it, literally Democrats in this generation are saying we want to go back to welfare as we knew it and do that again, what in the 1990s they said was a failed experiment of just sending checks out to people thinking that's going to end poverty. Now Joe Biden is standing up and saying we're going to end childhood poverty by mailing checks to people. That doesn't end childhood poverty. We all know, and we have seen it through history, that it actually perpetuates generational poverty. We need to encourage people to lift out of it.
Now, I also want to pause on your colleague, Ron Wyden. I'm sure he's a nice guy from Oregon. He is on a campaign to do away with stepped-up basis. Now, that's a little complicated for the Steelers fans, but basically it means that anyone who bought a house and saved 30 years to pay it off is going to get screwed if they live on the coast. Every family farm in Oklahoma, every small oil or natural gas producer, every car wash, every restaurant that descends to kids will be considered valued at the time that it was originally purchased. It will wipe out generations of small businesses and the savings of families. Did the Finance Committee agree on that? I mean, did that get the conversation it deserved, Senator?
Oh, no. Oh, no. It hasn't had any Finance Committee real conversation. There are a few things that have been discussed on things like energy policy where there was very strong pushback. But this whole issue of stepped-up bases, you put it in a capsule really well. If you wanted to put in the most basic thing for the family farm, where a family farm was purchased generations ago, they look at the value of it 40 years ago, let's say, when a farmer took over that from his dad or his mom, and he's passing it on to their kids. That family farm, that land, those tractors, those barns, all of that equipment has accrued tremendous gain over the course of that 40 years. What they want to do is when that farm is passed on to the next generation, they have to pay the taxes on the increase of that in 40 years. That's not liquid. That's in the land. That's in the equipment itself. They will literally have to sell the family farm to be able to pay the taxes, which means that land will probably go into corporate ownership or whatever it may be in the area, and it caused a tremendous stir in agriculture production across the country and for families. Take that to every family business. When it's passed on to the next generation, it just destroys that family because they have to then sell mom and dad's business to be able to pay the taxes on it. Why in the world would we want to have Uncle Sam hovering over the coffin of every American saying, I'm ready for my cut, no matter what it does to the family?
We have less than a minute. Senator Lankford, you know Ron Wyden. He knows what it's going to do. Why do they want to do this to people? It's ruinous. It's destructive.
It is ruinous and destructive. Well, there's two things on the far left, and I would tell you I was pretty shocked by this. There are folks on the far left, and I don't know if this is where Ron Wyden is. He and I have not had this blunt of a conversation. But I've heard multiple folks on the far left here in the Senate that have said they're really disturbed about families having wealth and passing it on. They want to move that wealth around in the economy, and that families don't need to cheat Uncle Sam by passing it on to the next generation. I look at this and say that is a great treasure and encouragement. I want to encourage every family to be able to own wealth, to be able to pass on to the next generation that is beneficial for those families, not detrimental to our economy.
Jim Lankford, keep fighting the good fight. The senator from Oklahoma, look him up on the web. Support him. James Lankford, a voice for the taxpayer from Oklahoma. I'll be right back, America, on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hear the latest reporting and analysis on the big stories of the day on the Daybreak Insider podcast. It's top-notch reporting from SRN News, along with the sharpest insight from Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, and the voices of townhall.com. The Daybreak Insider podcast. It's your first look at today's top stories. Available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and at salempodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by United States Senator Tom Cotton from the state of Arkansas. Arkansas is in the top 10 for the first time in my memory. Good morning, Senator, and congratulations on the Razorbacks' rise.
Good morning, Hugh. Thank you. It's nice for you to be able to congratulate the Razorbacks once, as opposed to
the Buckeyes will...
celebrating the Buckeyes' victory.
Yeah, once in a while we'll get there. Hey, what is going on in Massachusetts this morning?
You're aware of the phenomenon that I call the Soros prosecutors. George Soros and other left-wing activists have helped elect radical pro-criminal prosecutors across the country, like Larry Krasner in Philadelphia and Chesa Boudin in San Francisco. Another one is Rachel Rollins in Suffolk County. Rachel Rollins has now been nominated by Joe Biden to be the U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts. This is a woman, Hugh, who has ruled an entire category of crimes as presumptively off limits for prosecution unless her assistant DAs seek higher supervisor approval. And, Hugh, these are not crimes like jaywalking. I'm talking about breaking and entering, malicious destruction of property, drug trafficking, including fentanyl. And it's not surprising that over the last nearly 3 years since he took office, that murder and crime has spiked in Boston. And moreover, Hugh, she lacks the temperament to hold the office of U.S. attorney. She has said that she wants to destroy the criminal justice system from the inside. She has said that she's going to go to war with the U.S. attorney's office as a DA in Suffolk County on things like opioids and immigration. And last Christmas Eve, Hugh, she had a road rage incident at a mall with a local citizen because she she wanted to merge into the traffic lane first. So she rolled down her window, threatened her, turned on her police lights, and warned that she was going to give her a ticket.
Huh?
Now, I will tell you that it is unusual. It's not unprecedented. It's unusual to have recorded votes on U.S. attorneys. But if Joe Biden is going to start elevating these Soros prosecutors like Rachel Rollins and Larry Krasner and Chazza Boudin to U.S. attorneys, I can assure you that we won't just have recorded votes, but that Republicans will oppose these nominees and make it plain to the American people that the Democrats are elevating radical pro-crime prosecutors into these very important offices.
You know, yesterday, Senator Cotton, I asked the audience why they thought the United States experienced a 30% rise in murders from 2019 to 2020. 30% in murders, 21,000 murders. A lot of it has to do with lawlessness that is being decriminalized, leading to lawlessness at a higher level. No one has decriminalized murder, but a lot of people are walking away from minor crimes with no bail, walking away without being charged. It's all cumulative. It's the broken windows theory.
And Hugh, that's right. In Suffolk County, under Rachel Rollins' tenure as district attorney, is a perfect example of that. Her logic for refusing to prosecute crimes like drug trafficking. Drug trafficking, Hugh, not drug possession, drug trafficking. And breaking and entering. And malicious destruction of property is that if you don't prosecute those crimes, then when the criminals commit more serious crimes in the future, they won't face such long jail sentences. I'm not making that up, Hugh. That's part of her logic.
Will Elizabeth Warren and Ed Markey actually sit down and introduce her to the committee? You're on Judiciary. Do you expect them to actually do that?
I don't know if they plan to do that, Hugh. Again, typically, we don't even have hearings for U.S. attorneys. Or recorded votes. So this is a rare moment on the Judiciary Committee. But you know what's also rare, Hugh? Nominating a woman to be the U.S. attorney who said she wanted to go to war with the U.S. attorney's office and destroy the criminal justice system from the inside.
Well, good luck with that. You may have to use your hold. Let me ask you about Secretary Austin, General Milley, and General McKenzie. We have had 2 days of hearings. I've played a lot of it. At the end of those 2 days, what's your estimate of that trio and what happened in Afghanistan?
Well, they pulled back the curtain on Joe Biden's terribly flawed withdrawal from Afghanistan and exposed his lies to the American people. As they said under questioning from me on Tuesday, all three of them, and Scott Miller, the commander on the ground in Afghanistan, a legend in the Special Forces community, former commander of JSOC, a man who spent almost half of the 20-year war in Afghanistan on the ground in Afghanistan, all four of them recommended that the president keep a small troop presence in Afghanistan to prevent the exact kind of debacle that we saw. Joe Biden went on George Stephanopoulos' show last month, and this is the same Joe Biden that in April and May was all chesty and swaggering about how he had rejected the general's advice, just like he had done in 2009. He was the only one shrewd and tough enough not to be boxed in by the generals. But then when things went to hell in a handbasket in August, like, nope, no general's ever told me this. Yep. Another point, Hugh, that we learned is that Joe Biden has been telling everyone, well, all the generals said at the end that we had to get out by August 31st. Unanimous recommendation, 31st deadline after Kabul fell. Well, General Milley testified under my questioning that they weren't even asked their opinion of that until August 25th. August 25th, 5 days before the withdrawal. Might have been a little different if Joe Biden and his White House officials had said on August 15th, the moment Kabul fell, like, holy smokes, we got to do something to get our people out. Generals, what do you think? Or if they just followed what Lloyd Austin testifies, that they started making plans for evacuations as early as April and May, yet the State Department and the White House continued to put them off and refused to let them execute it. That's why we had people call our office, Hugh, after August 15th and said, hey, I'm here in Afghanistan. I'm stuck now. I had tickets to fly out on August 20th or August 28th or September 7th because they believe what Joe Biden had said about the government remaining in place and the security forces remaining in place.
Well, Senator, I watched as well our friend Mike Gallagher asked General McKenzie yesterday whether or not the attack on Forward Operating Base Chapman in March was a violation of Doha. General McKenzie paused for a long time and then said bluntly, "No, I do not believe that's correct. Seven Americans were wounded in an attack directed at an American facility. I believe the Doha agreement was off from that moment going forward." Do you believe there was any intention ever to enforce the conditions of the Doha agreement by President Biden?
No, not at all, Hugh. And General Milley also testified to the Senate that putting aside the question of violence against American troops, the Taliban never fully honored a single other term or condition of that agreement. Joe Biden made it clear from the very beginning that he was going to withdraw from Afghanistan no matter what, with total disregard for the likely consequences and the advice of his senior commanders. And this is the one case in which President Biden said, well, Donald Trump had a policy and agreement. I can't do anything about it. If only he had shown such deference to President Trump's Remain in Mexico agreement with the Mexican government or Safe Third Country agreements with Central American countries. If only he had followed that lead on the Paris Climate Accord or the Iran nuclear deal, we'd be in a much better position than we are today. And if he had taken his terms and conditions of the Doha agreement and held the Taliban's feet to the fire, we'd be in a different position in Afghanistan as well. We wouldn't have thousands of people left behind Taliban lines.
There are still American citizens trying to get out. There are still green card holders trying to get out. I know your office remains deeply involved in that. Senator, I don't know how we overcome the embarrassment of this, but I don't think we ever do without an accounting. 2 days of hearings did not answer questions. We still don't have a chronology. We still do not have any idea why the Taliban got control of Kabul. General McKenzie said he didn't negotiate that. Maybe check with the special representative. Are you going to have the special representative come over and talk to you as well?
We are going to have more hearings on this topic. We're not going to let it go. Even the Democrats, as you saw in their questioning, have some skepticism about the way the administration handled this withdrawal. So this was just the start of a series of hearings, not the conclusion.
All right, then, Senator, very quickly, we've got a vote today in the House. I expect the squad to roll over and pass $1 trillion. Then next week, they're going to try and pass $3.5 trillion. What do you hear from your colleagues who are trying to stand with the Republicans against this avalanche of fake money?
Hugh, I wouldn't be so sure about that in the House. Nancy Pelosi has this puffed up reputation as a legislative maestro who always has a plan. In reality, Hugh, she's just been stumbling from one deadline of her own making to one crisis of her own creation, trying to juggle all the balls and keep them in the air day to day. I think today may be the day they all collapse, though. And the reason they'll collapse is because the Democrats are in total disarray and they're in a circular firing squad as Joe Biden's poll numbers plummet and the American people begin to realize just how badly another $5 trillion of tax spending would impact their kitchen table issues.
Oh, I hope you're right. I do believe they are falling apart nationally. I think Glenn Youngkin's going to win over in Virginia. Did you happen to hear, I want to play for you, Terry McAuliffe, talking about schools? I wonder how this would play in Arkansas. Cut number 33.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
How would that go over in Arkansas, Senator Cotton?
Hugh, I did hear it, and at first I didn't believe it. So I hit rewind, and I listened to it again, and I just was astonished. I looked at my wife and said, "This race is over."
Yeah,
and yeah, I know that Glenn has already started to run ads about this, and he should. This is, I'd say, the closing issue in this campaign. After Virginia schools have been closed and on remote learning and had masks slapped on three-year-olds over the last year and a half, for Terry McAuliffe to say that parents shouldn't have a say in their kids' education is the perfect issue on which Glenn Youngkin is going to close and win this race, that he will respect parents' rights.
The short version of this is, shut up, parents. But once again, cut 33.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
You know, I'm not going to play anymore Terry McAuliffe saying nice things about me because he did that. Senator Cotton, very, very last question. When the $3.5 trillion comes up, it has to go to the Budget Committee first, right?
Yes, Hugh, the Budget Committee, although the Budget Committee largely plays a pro forma role, it's primarily the other committees that will be drafting that legislation. But, you know, in the Senate, they may not even want to have committee hearings because the committees are evenly divided and it's hard for them to move legislation. They may just take whatever gets cooked up in the House of Representatives. But, again, we don't know when that's going to happen. I mean, if Nancy Pelosi loses the vote on the infrastructure bill or pulls that bill today, she might as well just hand the gavel over to Speaker Bernie, since it's clear that the radical left is in charge of the House.
Oh, well said. Senator Tom Cotton, always a pleasure. Follow him on Twitter at SenTomCotton.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.